Natasha Seedorf joins the program now. Welcome, Natasha.
Hello.
Well, we're talking
here.
Yeah, it's nice to have you. Thank you for joining us. We're talking because you have a show at the Launchpad. It's there now, and it hangs through the end of the month. It's called Intimate Geographies. So let's start there. Why did you call it that? What does that mean?
Oh, that has so many meanings. I think, first of all, these are intimate objects. They're small. They invite the viewer to take a closer look. But also, all of the work that I've made for this show is comprised of found objects, objects that were precious to someone, that were gifted to me, objects that I found maybe a long time ago and I've just been keeping for so many years, 20, 30 years. So all of the, or most of the objects have quite a lot of meaning and are personal and intimate to me as an artist.
As an artist or as a person?
Or well, both. I guess as a person, yeah.
I guess there's probably no difference, right?
I am a person artist.
Are you a person who does art, or are you an artist being a person?
It's really hard to tell the difference these days.
Yeah, really?
Yeah. Wow. I'm definitely someone who believes that people can live artistically. I don't know if I do that, but I think it's possible.
Uh-huh. Well, that sounds like a laudable goal. How do you go about doing that?
That's a tricky question. I think, at least in light of this show and this work, I think everywhere I go, or almost everywhere I go, I try and see the beauty in a place. Oftentimes, I see the beauty in the small, the tiny things. So I find myself noticing a curled leaf on the ground, or you know, the little itty-bitty bird that just is sitting quietly in the tree. Or maybe I'll pick up a discarded feather or part of an acorn. And I just really love and honor those little things. And oftentimes I bring them home with me. And then, so I take all of those little things that I find so intriguing and so beautiful, and I bring them home. And I think I'm trying with this work to show people how I see the world a little bit, to invite them to how I see the world. Just every day I do see it as beautiful, precious, yeah, so maybe that's how I incorporate living artistically. I just see it that way, and then I'm try to make work to let the audience or my friends or my community see it the way I do.
On the Carbondale Arts website, I guess this is your line. Maybe it's the folks over at CA, but. You call it very tiny, tender work. That's a really beautiful phrase. Is that your phrase?
Yeah. Yeah, it is.
Uh-huh. And I guess that explains the intimate part of the name of your show, Intimate Geographies. And the geography, I guess, is interior.
Yeah, it is. It also is externally represented in the objects. You know, some of them are very, very space-specific or place-specific. Tiny and tender. I think, again, a sense of preciousness and a sense of ephemerality also, like, a lot of the things that I pick up are, you know, bones and, pieces of wood or feathers or bits of fluff or fur. And I see those things as being very, very ephemeral. And, I'd like to bring attention to the precious nature of those things. It brings tenderness to my heart to think about how how ephemeral life is.
Yes. What is it that William Blake said? He who kisses the joy as it flies lives in eternity's sunrise. Something
like
that.
That's beautiful.
Yeah. It's so fleeting. And, you know, these days we seem to be feeling that fleeting nature of things even more strongly than we ever have before. Maybe it's because we're finally paying attention. Do you think that could be it?
Maybe. Yeah, it's interesting that you should say that because, yes, I do feel like we are finally paying attention, and there is a part of me that's like, well, finally y'all are on the same page as me because I've been paying attention, uh-huh. and I've noticed, you know, and I do think that this work, like I said, I've had some of these objects, like the little mouse skull that I put in a piece called Mirror, Mirror. I've had that for 20 years.
Huh.
I found it in an abandoned house on Cumberland Island National Seashore off the coast of Georgia, and just a tender, precious thing that I've just kept with me and honored. And even back when I was in Georgia, I had a real sense of like things are changing. Their beaches were washing away, and the sea turtles were becoming extinct, and so even back then, I was aware of it.
So many of these objects that I've gone over to the launch pad and I looked at your pieces in person, which I was so grateful for. I'm actually also looking at them right now on the Carbondale Arts website. But so many of the pieces are incredibly delicate, not just the found part of the pieces, but what you constructed around it. It looks like balance is a big part of what you're trying to achieve with a lot of this. Maybe you could talk a little bit about that sense of balance that you're looking for with these pieces.
Yeah, I find myself in my studio balancing, working with composition and balance. And I try to balance something, say, dark and heavy, like a rusted, big rusted nail. I might balance that against a piece of white fluffy fur, uh-huh. or using something, the bright white shiny silver, against a sort of matte bone. I think it's balanced through juxtaposition, perhaps.
Huh.
Yeah, I think I would say that. I'm trying to reach a balance through juxtaposition. Uh-huh. I have, with all of these pieces, they took a lot of time because I was always moving the objects around, and sometimes I was sure that one piece was supposed to go with another. Like I have a piece of amber in a necklace called Magic Medicine, and I was sure that that was going to go with the necklace that I had that was called Attis, so close but so far away. And but it just didn't go. And then when I put it next to the bone, it was like, oh, that it has to go there. Huh. And so I'm always like looking for different elements that complement each other.
When you get that aha moment as you're moving things around and looking at different balances and different combinations, and you get that aha moment, is that an intuitive sense or is that a rational thing?
I think it's a felt sense. I feel it in my body as a yes. Hmm. I think it starts maybe with a rational thing, like, well, I think that this, you know, bright shiny object would look nice against this, dark object or this fluffy object, and I have a sort of a rational sense or a conceptual idea. But then when I bring the two pieces together, if they're meant to be together, then I get some sort of felt sense in my body. It's just like, I don't know, it's like a little bit of a tiny adrenaline rush or something. It's just like, yeah, that's it. I got it.
Huh. When you find a piece that draws your eye, do you know right away how you might use it, or does that come as you're playing with all the pieces in your studio?
Yeah, it comes later for the most part. I just know, for the most part, when I see a piece, like, oh, that's beautiful. Like the burl wood that you mentioned. I was hiking up a really steep hill and, you know, watching my feet, and there was lots of wood on the ground because there was it was a burn area. And I saw that piece, and I stopped in my tracks. I was like, oh, that! And I didn't know that I was going to make a piece of jewelry with it. I just knew that I had to worship it a little bit.
Oh, what a wonderful word. That says everything right there. You worship it.
Yeah, yeah.
That's interesting. I'm looking now at the piece that has a piece of amber balanced on, is that bone?
Yeah.
That's bone, and then there's it looks like an antique nail below it. That's an interesting, talk about balance. I mean, you look at it, it looks like it's about to fall over, but then you look at it again and go, wow, that really works. I really love how that, was that piece meant to be worn?
Oh, yes, it is. It's very wearable. That's one of the newer things about this work for me, is that everything is incredibly wearable. Huh. I know that seems odd for coming from a jeweler, but I make a lot more sort of sculptural pieces, sculptural, wearable sculptures, but fairly wearable. I don't know. I had some pieces in the fashion show that were steel cages that were, this was a long time ago. And so that they're wearable. These big steel cages were wearable, but they weren't, you know, they weren't comfortable. They weren't practical.
Right.
But that piece that you're referring to, the amber and the bone and the nail, I have wore all of these pieces around to make sure that they didn't snag and drop pieces and just be uncomfortable, or to also wanted to make sure they didn't change too much compositionally when they were worn. Was really important.
What do you mean by that? Tell me more about that.
Well, the way they're displayed right now, they're hanging straight down off of a hook, and so that affects the way that affects the relationship. It keeps the relationship of the chain to, you know, the main pendant, let's say, it's static. But when you put it on your body, the chain spreads because it goes around your neck. And so it changes the relationship.
Oh, okay.
Yeah. And so I wanted to make sure that change in relationship I'd still get a yes when I looked at it.
And so if something does snag, or if something just doesn't feel right, you go back and you rejigger it.
I've been doing a lot of rejiggering for sure. Yeah.
You mean with the pieces that are in the show?
Yeah. Pieces in the show. Yeah.
How many pieces are there? I didn't count them.
Well, so there's finished pieces that are for sale, and there's also some artifacts, research objects, and materials there. So I don't really know. I think when my item list is like about 32 items, but maybe there's only, you know, 26 of them that are finished pieces for sale, something like that.
Okay.
I don't remember exactly.
One of the pieces that really jumped out at me, it almost looked like Excalibur coming out of a piece of stone, but it's actually a stopper to a bottle that has some kind of fluid in it. Maybe you could describe that one. What's that one called?
That's a good question. I don't actually remember what that one was called.
Oh, really?
I think that's an artifact.
Oops,
I didn't name it. Yeah, that's right. It's an artifact research piece. That consists of the bottle, which is a bottle that I found in the house of a Nais Nin just outside of Paris.
Huh.
I got in there and I found that bottle and I took that home with me. And then the top part is piece of steel that I forged and twisted, and it was a scribe, you know, it was a tool. And then the piece that goes across it that makes it look like a sword is actually a lot of molten silver that escaped from a casting, and it just poured all over everything that was on my desk. And that scribe was there, and it was just a beautiful accident, the way the silver morphed to that piece of steel.
Huh. Yeah.
And so I put the scribe into the cork of the bottle. And it was like, and I got a yes when I did that.
and what's the liquid that's in the bottle?
Well, that I don't know if we'll ever know. I'm guessing, I'm thinking, since it was in the bathroom of a Anais Nin's house, it was some kind of beauty unguent, like a perfume, perhaps, or a facial oil.
Oh, so you didn't fill that. That's how you found it.
That's how I found it.
Interesting. Yeah. Interesting.
Yeah.
Huh. That's really interesting.
And it's just golden liquid. It stayed the same color all along, that beautiful gold color.
Uh-huh. Yeah, it is a beautiful
color.
It is. I've heard you say already a few times the words intimate, artifact research object. What does that mean?
So, I consider art to be a form of research, and what we tend to see out there in the world is the finished art, something we call art. But there's a lot of artifacts that are made in the making of art, and a lot of them are sort of me figuring out how to do something, and I'll try and solder a bolt onto the back of a piece of copper, or I'll fail, but something else will happen, or maybe I'll try to forge something and I'll mess it up, and it's not what I want it to be, but it has a potential, and so it's a learning experience. There's actually a piece. There's two pieces. One is called Object Observation, and the other one is called Object Relation. And there are two long necklaces, and each of them have a little cage-like object in them with a bit of glass that is a magnifier. And those are actually artifacts that I in order to make a magnifier with little pins on the back of it, I wanted those pins so I could pin it into wood or pin it onto something. I had to make it this form, this very specific form that would hold those pins in place, so that they wouldn't fall over when I was soldering it. Hmm. When I did that, I just liked the way it looked with the pins closed, wrapped over each other, and so I just kept making those forms. There's a research, and then what I don't use in a finished piece, I feel like is an artifact of that research.
Interesting. I see. So you're looking for the happy accident as you're messing around with these materials.
Well, yeah, sometimes. I'm certainly not going to throw that discovery away completely. If I make a mistake, I'm not necessarily going to, I don't want to lose the lesson, so to speak. So oftentimes I keep the mistake, and oftentimes it becomes a very important piece in another necklace or another object.
Huh. Let's take me back to how art happened in your life. Is it something that you knew you'd do for a long time, or was there an aha moment? And if so, what was that?
Well, my dad is an architect, and he taught me to draw when I was 5 years old. So I guess I've always been involved in creative endeavors. I think when I was in college, my first year was actually pre-veterinary medicine, and I was very interested in in animals and also their bones. I was also interested in anthropology at that time. So I was already collecting bones and stuff when I was, you know, in high school and early college. And then one day I went to the beach with my friend and we picked up these clay balls that were washing up on the beach, and I took one home and I started to sculpt it. And it was so easy for me to sculpt this object and understand it three-dimensionally. I sculpted a skull, and I just it was so easy to do it. And I just understood it. That was an aha moment for me. I was like, I understand three-dimensionality. I need whatever art I pursue needs to be three-dimensional.
Huh.
And so that's what took me finally into sculpture and then into metals.
So despite that need for 3D, did you find that drawing was also important to your artistic development?
Oh, yeah. I drew a lot. I still draw. I do sketches. I also draw on the computer. I'm a CAD person. I do computer-aided drafting. So, yeah, I do a lot of drawing still. And actually, you know, there's some things that I had to draw several times before I got right. Again, the brooch with the mouse skull in it, mirror, mirror. I had to draw the exterior design of that. It's a very intricate Victorian looking framework, and I drew that many, many times to get it right.
A lot of the metal that you incorporate into these pieces have very delicate cuts. How do you achieve that? You're not using lasers or something, are you?
No, I have a jeweler's saw with a very, very fine blade on it. So it's a hand saw.
Oh.
And the blade is just, you know, it's less than a 32nd of an inch wide. So they break easily.
Uh-huh.
But yeah, that's how I achieve that. And I'm not even using the smallest blade that's available.
Oh, huh. Interesting. Wow. Yeah, that must take a while. Some of those cuts, it's like cutting a jigsaw puzzle or something.
Yeah, but it's so magical. Once you learn how to use the jeweler saw, it's so incredible how freeing it is, and how much it offers you as a jeweler, as a metalsmith. I teach at the CMC, that's, you know, I always teach, we call it piercing. I always teach piercing to my students.
Okay. Are you happy with Intimate Geographies?
I am over the moon with it. I just think it's so great.
Oh, that's great.
I love it.
Yeah? Well, that's good to hear. Yeah. Why do you love it? Why is it the definitive Natasha Seedorf?
Well, that's hard to say. I mean, I guess it is currently, but this work is so different, really, than some of the other work that I've done, that I don't know if it's going to be definitive forever.
I see.
But I'm really happy with it just because it's a cohesive group. It shows well. And of course, Carbondale Arts just did such a beautiful job setting it up with the lighting and they just really supported me so much, and it's just been a great experience.
Hmm. Where do you see your art going in the next few years, Natasha?
Well, I'd love to make more work that that gets out into the public. I sold one of those pieces, and
all right, that was, yay!
Yeah,
congratulations!
That was so great.
Yeah,
I'd love to make more work that speaks to people in a way that they would, you know, they'd like to have it for themselves. So I really like where this work is going, and so I believe I'm going to continue to pursue a lot of the themes that are there.
Mm-hmm.
And continue to do some more research to see how things are going to work best.
Huh. That sounds.
I still have some pieces on my bench that didn't make it into the show.
Oh, okay.
So
that's a good start for the next one.
Yeah.
That's great. Natasha Seedorf, I want to thank you for spending half an hour talking about your art. It's really interesting and different. Thank you.